Greetings. We enter a new chapter. Number 12, the significance of sacrifice, which was retitled in the Arya. It appeared as Works and Sacrifice Part 2. Excuse me. It saw print first. On 15 July 1917. An interesting note, if you've looked at the Arya, you'll see that the date of each issue is, for instance, 15th of August, 15th with the month was whenever it was published, true. But it was always 15th. This is the first month in the entire publication's history to this point where it says 15 July. It's a small note, but for those of you who are at heart scriveners and scholars, maybe it's worth noting along the way. The issue opened, of course, with the Life Divine. And it, too, was a continuation, a second chapter on the eternal and the individual. Then came Essays on the Gita. And then the chapter from the Synthesis of Yoga followed. It was the lower triple Purusha. Oh, the Purusha as operative in the Kshara. Don't you think that's connected to the theme tonight? So, retitled when it first appeared in 1923 in book form as Essays on the Gita, The Significance of Sacrifice. The Gita's theory of sacrifice is stated in two separate passages. One we find in the third chapter, another in the fourth. The first gives it in language which might, taken by itself, seem to be speaking only of the ceremonial sacrifice. The second, interpreting that into the sense of a large philosophical symbolism, transforms at once its whole significance and raises it to a plane of high psychological and spiritual truth. And this is a translation coming next in the third chapter, shlokas 10 through 16. With sacrifice, the Lord of creatures of old created creatures and said, by this shall you bring forth fruits or offspring. Let this be your milker of desires. That's 10. Foster by this the gods. And let the gods foster you. Fostering each other, you shall attain to the supreme good. That's 11. Fostered by sacrifice, the gods shall give you desired enjoyments. Who enjoys their given enjoyments and has not given to them, he is a thief. 12. The good who eat what is left from the sacrifice are released from all sin, but evil are they and enjoy sin who cook the food for their own sake. 13. From food, creatures come into being. From rain is the birth of food. From sacrifice comes into being the rain. Sacrifice is born of work. 14. Work know to be born of Brahman. Brahman is born of the immutable. Therefore, is the all-pervading Brahman established in the sacrifice. 15. He who follows not here the wheel thus set in movement, evil is his being, sensual is his delight. In vain, O Partha, that man lives. 16. So along the way, some interesting terms in Sanskrit. The food left from the sacrifice. Yajna Shishta Sinata, that's in 13. Brahman is born of the immutable, the Akshara. Remember, the Kshara is that which moves, which is mutable, which is ever-changing in the phenomenal world. The immutable Akshara is that which does not change. So curious that this Brahman, which is obviously the divine working in the world, is born, comes from that which is immutable and superior to movement. The all-pervading Brahman, Sarvagatam. He continues, having thus stated the necessity of sacrifice, we shall see hereafter in what sense we may understand a passage which seems at first sight to convey only a traditional theory of ritualism and the necessity of the ceremonial offering. Krishna proceeds to state the superiority of the spiritual man to works. Now, on this ceremonial business, the nitya karma of the Vedic rule, as Sri Aurobindo has noted it, let's do pause to look at that for a moment. We talked about how it ordinates the typical routine of life, the rhythms of life, but there are five different sacrifices that go into the definition of what is nitya karma, the obligatory daily work. The first is deva yajna. You have to recognize your kinship, your relationship to the divine. Rishi yajna. You should keep your consciousness attuned to those who have realized, who embody the truth, who are great examples, who have a profound influence upon you. You should, Pitra Yajna, be done also, which is the offering to the parents. Now, if they're in the body, one should be honoring the parents because that is from where we came. At every moment, every day, we should be thinking of their weal, of their heartiness, of their well-being. But also, once they have gone, we should keep them in our mind, because we may not have them in our body anymore, but we should be offering them auspicious thought, happy remembrance, encouraging them to go on their way through worlds unseen to us now. The fourth is Nara Yajna, which is the sacrifice that we do to the world around us, to humanity. What have we to give there? We draw so much, we should be giving something back. We should live in solidarity with all, not in division, but in that which brings together, that which unites. And finally, there is Bhuta Yajna. That is the sacrifice that we give with all beings, not simply humanity, but stretching into the whole world, the material world, the vital world, the mental world, all beings, whatever their shape, whatever their specie, are close to us. So you see, from the ground up, as it were, from the material world to the spiritual world, it is recognized that we're in a constant process of offering. Yajna is not simply enforced upon us. It is the very nature of existence. And the nature of existence is a conscious relationship, an exchange of energies. So let's continue with what Sri Aurobindo is writing about here, the going beyond ceremonial offering. We'll start that again. Having thus stated the necessity of sacrifice, we shall see hereafter in what sense we may understand a passage which seems at first to convey only a traditional theory of ritualism and the necessity of the ceremonial offering. Krishna proceeds to state the superiority of the spiritual man to works. Quote, but the man whose delight is in the self and who is satisfied with the enjoyment of the self, and in the self he is content, for him there exists no work that needs to be done. He has no object here to be gained by action done, and none to be gained by action undone. He has no dependence on all these existences for any object to be gained. This is beautiful. Chapter 3, shlokas 17 and 18. Delight in the self, atmarati. Satisfied with the enjoyment of the self, atmatriptaha. Content in the self, atmani evacha santushtaha. No object here to be gained, karyam na vidyate. Here then are the two ideals, Vedist and Vedantist, standing as if in all their sharp original separation and opposition. On one side, the active ideal of acquiring enjoyments here and the highest good beyond by sacrifice, and the mutual dependence of the human being and the divine powers. And on the other, facing it, the austerer ideal of the liberated man who, independent in the spirit, has nothing to do with enjoyment or works or the human or the divine worlds, but exists only in the peace of the supreme self, joys only in the calm joy of the Brahman. The next verses create a ground for the reconciliation between the two extremes. The secret is not inaction as soon as one turns towards the higher truth, but desireless action both before and after it is reached. So it is speaking here to our place in the world and in works from a poise which is beyond the taint of egoistic, desire-filled action. The liberated man has nothing to gain by action, but nothing also to gain by inaction, and it is not at all for any personal object that he has to make his choice. We saw this above, 3, 17, and 18. But now he moves on to 3, 19, and 20. Therefore, without attachment, perform ever the work that is to be done, done for the sake of the world, loka sangraha, as is made clear immediately afterward. For by doing work without attachment, man attains to the highest. For it was even by works that Janaka and the rest attained to perfection. Loka Sangraha. That's a great concept. It means to hold together the world. So it is through our action that the world is consciously made coherent, is stitched together, woven together, held together as if our arms are around it. By doing works in the world doesn't go flying off into oblivion, does not end. Our engagement in the world is what offers it the possibility of perfection, the possibility of happiness, the possibility of reunion with its divine source from which it came. But it requires work done without attachment, without that grasping. And what is one of the earliest elements of the practice of yoga? Aparigraha, not reaching out to grasp. Elementary. Attained to perfection, samsiddhi. It is true that works and sacrifice are a means of arriving at the highest good, Shreha Param Avapsyata. That's 3.11. But there are three kinds of works. That done without sacrifice for personal enjoyment, which is entirely selfish and egoistic and misses the true law and aim and utility of life, Mogam Partha Sajivati. In vain he lives. That done with desire, but with sacrifice, and the enjoyment only as a result of sacrifice, and therefore to that extent consecrated and sanctified. And that done without desire or attachment of any kind. It is the last which brings the soul of man to the highest. Param apnoti purusha. So this would have us go trippingly through 3.11, 16, all the way up to 19. The whole sense and drift of this teaching turns upon the interpretation we are to give to the important words yajna, karma, brahma, sacrifice, work, brahman. If the sacrifice is simply the Vedic sacrifice, if the work from which it is born is the Vedic rule of works, and if the Brahman from which the work itself is born is the Shabda Brahman in the sense only of the letter of the Veda, then all the positions of the Vedist dogma are conceded, and there is nothing more. Ceremonial sacrifice is the right means of gaining children, wealth, enjoyment. By ceremonial sacrifice, rain is brought down from heaven and the prosperity and continuity of the race assured. Life is a continual transaction between the gods and men, in which man offers ceremonial gifts to the gods from the gifts they have bestowed on him, and in return is enriched, protected, fostered. Therefore, all human works have to be accompanied and turned into a sacrament by ceremonial sacrifice and ritualistic worship. Work not so dedicated is accursed. Enjoyment without previous ceremonial sacrifice and ritual consecration is a sin. Even salvation, even the highest good, is to be gained by ceremonial sacrifice. It must never be abandoned. Even the seeker of liberation has to continue to do ceremonial sacrifice, although without attachment. It is by ceremonial sacrifice and ritualistic works done without attachment that men of the type of Janaka attain to spiritual perfection and liberation. Deep breath. Obviously, this cannot be the meaning of the Gita, for it would be in contradiction with all the rest of the book. Even in the passage itself, without the illuminating interpretation afterwards given to it in the fourth chapter, we have already an indication of a wider sense where it is said that sacrifice is born from work, work from Brahman, Brahman from the Akshara, and therefore the all-pervading Brahman, Sarvagatam Brahma, is established in the sacrifice. This is 3, 14, and 15. The connecting logic of the therefore and the repetition of the word Brahma are significant, for it shows clearly that the Brahman from which all work is born has to be understood with an eye not so much to the current Vedic teaching, in which it means the Veda, as to a symbolical sense in which the creative word is identical with the all-pervading Brahman, the eternal, the one self, present in all existences, sarva-bhuteshu, and present in all the workings of existence. So that sarva-bhuteshu goes to chapter 18, verse 20, towards the conclusion and the summation of the whole thing. So Sri Aurobindo, using his knowledge of all manner of Indo-European languages, Latin, Greek, Sanskrit, can tell you that the placement of the word order, the significant stress on this and that, has meaning. It is not accidental. It is intentional. The Gita is presaging, is telegraphing where it's going by this suggestive language. And it continues. The Veda is the knowledge of the divine, the eternal. Quote, I am he who is to be known in all the books of the knowledge. Vedaischa cha vidyaha. That's 15:15, by the way. Krishna will say in a subsequent chapter. But it is the knowledge of him in the workings of Prakriti, in the workings of the three gunas, first qualities or modes of nature, Trigunya Vashi, I can't do it tonight. Trigunya Vishaya Vedaha. That's 245. This Brahman or divine in the workings of nature is born, as we may say, out of the Akshara, the immutable Purusha, the self who stands above all the modes or qualities or workings of nature. Nistraigunya. This again is 245. But note that Sri Aurobindo is in profound agreement with Ramanuja's interpretation of the Gita in this place, that the divine saturates, Brahman saturates the play of nature. The Akshara is completely present in what moves the Kshara Brahman. The Brahman is one, but self-displayed in two aspects, the immutable being and the creator and originator of works in the mutable becoming. Atman Sarva Bhutani. That's 629. It is the immobile, omnipresent soul of things, and it is the spiritual principle of the mobile working of things. Purusha poised in himself, and Purusha active in Prakriti. It is akshara and kshara. So this gulf where we say that is divine, akshara is divine, and kshara is full of flaws, mottled, imperfect, not divine, and shake our heads disgustedly at the world. No, this is incorrect, a wrong reading. Kshara and akshara both are poised in the being of Brahman. Purusha is present in both. In both of these aspects, he writes, the divine being, Purushottama, the supreme person, manifests himself in the universe, and immutable above all qualities is his poise of peace, self-possession, equality, samam brahma. From that proceeds his manifestation in the qualities of Prakriti and their universal workings. From the Purusha in Prakriti, from this Brahman with qualities, proceed all the works of the universal energy, karma, in man and in all existences. From that work proceeds the principle of sacrifice. So he's connecting everything back to that. The divine as an omnipresent reality, to use Sri Aurobindo's language from the life divine, beyond time, beyond space, unmoving, immutable, the akshara, in time, penetrating all of space, constantly moving, the kshara, but also Purushottama, the supreme who holds all of this within its indescribable being. You can't say that it is unmoving. You can't say that it is moving. It is doing all of it simultaneously. So here again, Sri Aurobindo has adumbrated what will become metaphysically clear later when he takes it up in his essays, that the Vedantic position really contains all of this. It is world-affirming, world-exceeding, and all reconciling. It accepts every possible spiritual realization, every possible experience in the realm of the spirit and in the realm of matter, life, and mind. All that is in manifestation is part of the delectation of the divine being, who enjoys the universal play and the play in you too, without attachment, without distraction, ever focused on its own being, ever seated in its own self. And all this is a manifestation of that self, Swayambhu. Even, well, there's a footnote. Let's go through the footnote. This is interesting. And if I may say, the footnote goes to the 8th chapter, and this is verse 1 through 4 there. That this is the right interpretation results also from the opening of the 8th chapter, where the universal principles are enumerated. Akshara, Brahma, Swabhava, Karma, Kshara, Bhava, Purusha, Adiyajna. Akshara is the immutable Brahman, spirit or self, Atman. Swabhava is the principle of the self, Adhyatma, operative as the original nature of the being, own way of becoming. And this proceeds out of the self, the akshara. Karma proceeds from that and is the creative movement Visarga, which brings all natural beings and all changing subjective and objective shapes of being into existence. The result of karma, therefore, is all this mutable becoming, the changes of nature developed out of the original self nature, kshara bhava, out of swabhava. Purusha is the soul, the divine element in the becoming, adidaivata, by whose presence the workings of karma become a sacrifice, yajna, to the divine within. Adiyajna is this secret divine who receives the sacrifice. So when you get a moment, take a little piece of paper and write all these names down on the paper and see how they relate each to the other. Start from the top, go to the bottom, and look at the connectivity in the worlds of being, the metaphysical principles which become cosmological, which become personal, which become dynamic, all of them flowing from the truth of pure spiritual being. It is Atman, which expresses itself as Swabhava, its own being, which then generates karma, which multiplies the universe as we see it and experience it. And the karma arriving from that is that which connects us back through the principle of sacrifice to that from which all came. Ah, it is beautiful. It is the description of the round. Of the round. We're here, we offer everything there, everything comes back to us from there, but we've never moved. Here we are, still. So even, to go back to Sri Aurobindo's essay, even the material interchange between gods and men proceeds upon this principle, as typified in the dependence of rain and its product food on this working, and on them the physical birth of creatures. For all the working of Prakriti is in its true nature a sacrifice, yajna, with the divine being as the enjoyer of all energisms and works and sacrifice, and the great Lord of all existences, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. And to know this divine, all-pervading, and established in sacrifice, Sarvagatam Yajna Pratishtitam, is the true, the Vedic knowledge. So those last two, 529 and 315. But he may be known in an inferior action through the devas, the gods, the powers of the divine soul in nature, and in the eternal interaction of these powers and the soul of man, mutually giving and receiving, mutually helping, increasing, raising each other's workings and satisfaction, a commerce in which man rises towards a growing fitness for the supreme good. He recognizes that his life is a part of this divine action in nature, and not a thing separate and to be held and pursued for its own sake. And we're here 3:12 through 15 for the next little while. He regards his enjoyments and the satisfaction of his desires as the fruit of sacrifice and the gift of the gods in their divine universal workings. And he ceases to pursue them in the false and evil spirit of sinful, egoistic selfishness, as if they were a good to be seized from life by his own unaided strength, without return and without thankfulness. as this spirit increases in him, he subordinates his desires, becomes satisfied with sacrifices, the law of life and works, and is content with whatever remains over from the sacrifice, giving up all the rest freely as an offering in the great and beneficent interchange, which is life, between his life and the world life. So that's 313, and we can see that Sri Aurobindo is covering again some of the ground that he started the chapter with. Yajna Shishta Sinata Sinaha. Whoever goes contrary to this law of action and pursues works and enjoyment for his own isolated personal self-interest lives in vain. Again, 316. He misses the true meaning and aim and utility of living and the upward growth of the soul. He is not on the path which leads to the highest good. So Krishna has shown that you can use even the lower as a means of raising yourself, preparing yourself to get to the higher. Now he says, but the highest, Sri Aurobindo says, but the highest only comes when the sacrifice is no longer to the gods, but to the one all-pervading divine, established in the sacrifice. This is 319 and 315 again. Sarvagatam Brahma, of whom the gods are inferior forms and powers. And when he puts away the lower self that desires and enjoys, and gives up his personal sense of being the worker to the true executrix of all works, Prakriti, and his personal sense of being the enjoyer to the divine Purusha, the higher and universal self, who is the real enjoyer of the works of Prakriti. That's 317. So two things go: the claim on the fruit, the desire for the fruit, and the sense that one is the author of the work, that one determines what one does. To understand Prakriti and to understand Purusha working in Prakriti is to understand that no, that will is being done through me. And that is the real enjoyer of the experience. So it's by the complete offering of the work that we attain felicity and in a sense get a share in that share, that identification, that attachment to the divine is called bhakti. Of that we will see more later. In that self, and not in any personal enjoyment, he finds now his sole satisfaction, complete content, pure delight. He has nothing to gain by action or inaction, depends neither on gods nor men for anything, seeks no profit from any, for the self-delight is all sufficient to him, but does works for the sake of the divine only as a pure sacrifice without attachment or desire. 319. Thus, he gains equality, samatvam, and becomes free from the modes of nature, nistraigunya. His soul takes its poise not in the insecurity of Prakriti, which is always moving, but in the peace of the immutable Brahman, even while his actions continue in the movement of Prakriti. Thus is sacrifice his way of attaining to the highest. remember Sri Aurobindo, was doing this, consciously engaged in this, from the early days after his realization, liberation from the chain of ego, which he experienced in Baroda in 1909. Immediately, he was continuing the work and simply offering it, making no claim on it. There was no self anymore to make a claim. But he continued the work. And thus his sacrifice, his way of attaining to the highest, so it unfolded. From that stationing in the Akshara Brahman, while he continued to work through the Kshara Purusha in political affairs, he was lifted into proximity with and identity with the Purushottama a few months later. So what was his reading material when this was occurring in the Alipur jail? A few Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita. And he could read the Gita, and it would explain to him the nature of his developing spiritual experience, the all-inclusivity of it. And he could read it and see, this is the all in all. This is Brahman here. This is Brahman there. Now there is understanding. And the work continued. And the work then had no personal claim, no personal aim. It was done for the continuation of the teaching for the Sanatana Dharma. Simply that this great teaching, which unites and connects all together and explains the mysteries of the cosmos, divulges the secret delights of the essential self, should continue, should be available on this globe. So let's put our bookmark there. We'll finish the chapter next time. This is a reading from Savitri Tonight, which occurs in Book 2, the Book of the Travel of the Worlds, in Canto 4, The Kingdoms of the Little Life, starts on page 140, and we'll read over to page 141 on it, I think. Although on earth are firm established lives, a working of habit or a sense of law, a steady repetition in the flux, yet are its roots of will ever the same. These passions are the stuff of which we are made. This was the first cry of the awaking world. It clings around us still and clamps the God. Even when reason is born and soul takes form, in beast and reptile and in thinking man, it lasts and is the fount of all their life. This too was needed, that breath and living might be. The spirit in a finite, ignorant world must rescue so its prisoned consciousness, forced out in little jets at quivering points from the inconscient's sealed infinitude. Then slowly it gathers mass, looks up at light. This nature lives tied to her origin. A clutch of nether force is on her still. Out of unconscious depths, her instincts leap. A neighbor is her life to insentient naught. Under this law, an ignorant world was made. In the enigma of the darkened vasts, in the passion and self-loss of the infinite, when all was plunged in the negating void, non-being's night could never have been saved if being had not plunged into the dark, carrying with it its triple mystic cross. Invoking in world time the timeless truth, bliss changed to sorrow, knowledge made ignorant, God's force turned into a child's helplessness, can bring down heaven by their sacrifice. A contradiction founds the base of life. The eternal, the divine reality has faced itself with its own contraries. Being became the void and conscious force, nescience and walk of a blind energy, and ecstasy took the figure of world pain. In a mysterious dispensation's law, a wisdom that prepares its far-off ends, planned so to start her slow eonic game. A blindfold search and wrestle and fumbling clasp of a half-seen nature and a hidden soul, a game of hide-and-seek in twilight rooms, a play of love and hate and fear and hope, continues in the nursery of mind its hard and heavy romp of self-born twins. At last, the struggling energy can emerge and meet the voiceless being in wider fields. Then can they see and speak and breast to breast in a larger consciousness, a clearer light. The two embrace and strive and each know each, regarding closer now the playmate's face. Even in these formless coilings, he could feel matter's response to an infant stir of soul. In nature, he saw the mighty spirit concealed, watched the weak birth of a tremendous force, pursued the riddle of Godhead's tentative pace, heard the faint rhythms of a great unborn muse. Namaste. Jai Ma.